to another edition of Daggers and Lids, of course, the podcast which brings you all the news around the world about women's cricket. And as ever, Daggers, there is so much to talk about, not just domestically here in England, but there's international series going on at the moment. And of course, the World Cup is not too far away. We're going to have a special guest who will be joining us very shortly as well. At the moment, Daggers, we are here at Trent Bridge.
Yes. It's our final opportunity to be together.
It is.
Before the winter time. We'll try and get together maybe Christmas time, something like that. Have a little Daggers and Lids celebration. Come join us. But yeah, we're here for the Royal London Bombay Cup.
Well, it's changed, isn't it?
Changed.
It has
again,
changed.
Yeah. The Metrobank 50 over final between Somerset and Glamorgan. And it gives us an opportunity to do this podcast, because at the moment the covers are on, it's absolutely chucking down and the forecast is not good.
No.
So bad, in fact, that we have decided to wear high quality knitwear between us. I do like the Aaron-ness of your cardigan.
Well, I have to say, it was the first thing I noticed of you, Daggers, how smart the cardigan was. And just to complete the outfit, you've got a little scarf going as well. You look like you should be in a country home somewhere.
I feel like a roaring fire and a small Scotty dog and a glass of brandy.
And a cigar.
Cigar, which is, or a pipe. I feel like a pipe and a brandy that I'm just rolling. Because this is our podcast, I can actually say thank you to Tom Wharton at Barrington Air, because he made this for me in merino wool. Haven't got a sponsor, we can do what we like.
We absolutely can.
And so thank you to Tom, who also makes dashing suits and shirts that I wear as well on the telly. But yeah, I'm really, really pleased with this one. Even Asher, my partner, said, "Ooh, you look good today," which is great news for me. Sort of suggests that she fancies me.
You've got to keep the spark going, haven't you?
You have to keep the spark going at my age. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Yeah, tons to talk about. And we are going to try and bash out as many podcasts as we can. Yeah. You're going to the World T20 when? A week's time?
Friday, yep. So today is Sunday. I'm going Friday.
Yeah, so we're going to try and get as much material out there as we can. Can't wait to speak to Lauren Bell. She will be in Dubai. So great to catch up with her and also talk about what we've got, how she was over the summer. Lots to talk about from her bowling perspective and hopes and dreams for the World T20. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'd be good to get a bit of insight as well as to how their prep's going. They've been out in Abu Dhabi as well with a training camp where I gather it's been pretty toasty out there, which is
tends to be
for us English people, not ideal, but
scarf on. Yeah.
Ways and means of coping with it. Right, let's start with what's been going on here in England. Obviously, it's just coming to the end of our domestic season here, and it's been the Rachel Hayhoe Flint, which has sort of capped it off, really. Remember, it's the last time that it's going to be as we know it. The good thing is, though, the name is going to remain the same, which is fantastic. Obviously, we know about the changes with the new counties being formed and all the professional contracts coming in. But as we know it, the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy has been in its last season. The final was recently. It was the weekend just gone. It was yesterday, actually,
wasn't it?
On Saturday.
Yes.
And it was the Sunrisers against the South East Stars. The Sunrisers, so many people will be chuffed to hear, have won their first ever trophy, Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy. It was a rain-affected game. South East Stars batted first. They were all out 212. And it was eventually in a position where the Sunrisers were chasing, but they were in a good enough position that when the rain did come down, they were ahead of DLS, or DRS,
DRS,
as we like to call it here on the Daggers and Lids podcast.
DRS.
And just a few standout performances. Grace Scrivens and Alice McLeod, they were out there in the middle for the winning moment, which would have felt a bit surreal. Well, a little bit of a
anticlimactic, really. I don't think the Sunrisers will mind so much.
No.
But anyway, sorry, continue.
No, they won't mind at all. And then Kate Kopach as well. I think that's the right pronunciation. 4 for 27 for her with the ball. But how good for the Sunrisers.
Well, look, say about the final year of the Rachel Hayhoe Flint. It's going to become the Metro Bank 50 over competition, as you've mentioned, but they're going to be playing for the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy. So that is the really good news about that.
Yeah,
the trophy name will remain the same, even though the competition will change its name next year. It was, we spoke on our previous incarnation of the Daggers and Lids podcast about the woes of the Sunrisers in domestic competition. And they did not win a game in this 50-over format for three seasons. Mm. And you would imagine that morale would have been pretty low. That feeling of, are we ever going to win one, will have definitely crept into the dressing room. And so you've got to give huge props to captain, coaches, for keeping going, having a plan and having a path, and then finally it clicking for them, getting the right players in, seeing the development of someone like Grace Scrivens, who, you know, joined as a very young player, and has grown with this team, and her development has sort of coincided with the Sunrisers' improvements as well. People like Joe Gardner, who's been there for a long while, Cordelia Griffith, and Cordelia it was who scored a half century in the final, and you know, batted well in the semis too. Four half centuries in the last five games for her, so it's great to see the improvements of those players, and subsequently the improvements for the Sunrisers, and to cap it off with a victory against a strong side like the South East Stars, it's got to be hugely satisfying, despite the fact that they are going to be no more. No. What was lovely this last week or so was actually seeing the final games and the reactions from all of the teams, all of the franchises. The Western Storm I saw, they had a recent end of season do, where knowing full well it was the last time that the Western Storm would be in existence. And all of these sides, these franchises, just sort of celebrating the fact that they've existed over the past, what would it be now, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, or linking in with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. So I think it would be 7 or 8 years or so. And sort of saying, you know, this is an end of an era, but what a moment for the Sunrisers, really.
I think there'll be a lot of happy people that they've managed to finally get a trophy. And as you say, against the strong sides as well. And you've mentioned Western Storm, which actually moves us on nicely to our next piece of news, which...
Don't just throw it together.
We don't just turn up and chat.
No.
That would be silly. But Western Storm, obviously linked with Somerset, as are a lot of their players. So the news recently of Somerset, obviously being one of the 8 counties which are going to have a professional women's side. So many other counties have announced a lot of their players, but others haven't so much. Have they been pretty quiet
this
about what they've been doing? Yes.
This was a complaint on the last Daggers and Lids podcast. I think it was me. Probably was, because you're not really complaining, I'm quite complaining, that we didn't have the announcements. And just going back to the Sunrisers a second, you would imagine that there would be a strong link with the Sunrisers to the newly formed Essex side in Tier 1. But I think I complained about the lack of signings from Essex, from Somerset, from Hampshire, given that the South East Stars have announced 13, Durham have announced 5 or something like that, Warwickshire the same. So this, at least, we have some light at the end of this tunnel from Somerset.
Maybe they've been listening to the podcast and they've thought, right, we need to get our act together.
And they should.
Anyway, the news is Sophie Luff has signed for Somerset, which people who follow the women's game, you would think that should be the first sign-in for them for a number of reasons, really. I think, one, she has been around for such a long time, even when county cricket was the main competition in terms of the county championships. That's all we had as players for T20 and 50 over cricket. She was there. She'd obviously been captain for a long time as well. So I think for Somerset to announce her as their first signing, it feels like an apt thing to do. Mm-hmm. But also from their point of view, it's sort of saying, right, we want to recruit our best local players. And she is the one who has been there throughout, really, hasn't she?
This is... The word that you used is local players, and I think supporters, I mean, Somerset get great support anyway. The Western Storm have always had fantastic support down in Taunton especially. And I think if supporters can have a link with the team, knowing that they've got local players around, and we see it in the men's game, you really do. And let's go back to this men's competition, loath as I am to talk about the men's game, just trying to equate it. that Leicestershire last year won this 50 over competition, yeah. and the stars of that particular day were local boys.
Mm.
There was Harry Swindles, Sam Evans, Josh Hull, all from the Leicestershire and Rutland area.
Yeah.
And I think supporters have a great deal of affinity with those successes and knowing it was local lads who came through the system, who've gone through local cricket, and it's going to be a similar thing. And I think as much as you can do that in the women's game,
yeah.
will be absolutely vital. Sophie went through the pathways, the Somerset pathways. She made her debut for Somerset in 2009.
Mm.
She's 30 years old now. She's got a great deal of leadership experience, both with Western Storm, also in the 100. The first year of the 100, yes, she had to captain the Welsh Fireside because of a variety of injuries and that sort of thing. And even though it wasn't a very successful, you know, time for the Welsh Fire, she's got that experience. So I think it's a really strong sign. No, she's not a big international player, which a lot of counties will want to announce to get excitement building and know that you've got those internationals on your books. But actually, I think signing a player such as Sophie Love as for the local area, to say you've got one of your own who is part of that side, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, and it's a little bit similar as well. I know Holly Armitage is Yorkshire, but actually for Durham to sign someone like her, she's not one of the big international stars, is she, for England? But she is someone who absolutely deserves to be picked up in this new structure. There's so many... like older players isn't the right word, but sort of mid-20 onwards who have committed a large chunk of their time to trying to make it in the game, even when there hasn't been that much there. So Sophie Luff is certainly one of those players.
I think you can call them senior players.
Senior players.
By the way, you can follow the Somerset women's team if you go on X... at Somerset Women. They have got their own Twitter feed, now X feed or whatever it is. And I'm hoping, I'm not quite sure if other counties have done the same. I think Lancashire may have. But just to go on that, you know, I think if you're Lancashire, you're signing Kate Cross. She's you know, that's the biggest name from the local area, international player, or Sophie Eccleston. You know, those, so there is that affinity with those, sorry, as we've seen with Bryony Smith and Alice Davidson Richards and players such as that. It's absolutely vital to have that little link between the local community and the supporters and the club. And I think that's the way a lot of sides will want to go.
Yeah, well, we keep our eyes peeled as well. If there are more signings, which I'm sure there will be announced shortly, then we will keep you across those. Right, from Taunton to Abu Dhabi, we are really pleased to say that we are joined by Lauren Bell, who, of course, many of you know, is now one of England's leading bowlers. And she currently is out in Abu Dhabi at the moment with the England side. They've had a training camp out there. So let's have a chat with her and see what she's got to say. Lauren, so good to see you. Thank you for joining us. Your first time on the Daggers and Lids podcast, I think. So it'd be really good to get your insight. You're obviously out in Abu Dhabi at the moment. Just tell us a little bit about how that's going.
I know, what a treat. It's been good. It's been, when we get here, we've been here for about a week now, but yeah, it's been good. It's more of a like training prep camp, but I guess we've been quite lucky that it's been moved to Dubai, so we're kind of training under conditions it's going to be, but yeah, it's been hot. It's been good.
I was going to ask that. What are the conditions like there out there? Obviously, the wickets, how they play. And I know the heat sort of will speak for itself. But from a cricketing point of view and even a bowling point of view, what have you already noticed?
Yes, I've never played out here. But obviously, we play in the World Cup. We've got games in Dubai and in Sharjah. And they obviously, we aren't 100% sure, but we're thinking that the wickets we're playing on in Abu Dhabi will be similar to Dubai. And they're, I mean, they've not got the most pace, which obviously for a seamer is, but they're pretty low, not the quickest, but you just got to hit the stumps. It's basically what we've done for the last week, is just talk about the teams that hit the stumps the most, probably be the most successful. So yeah, and I guess conditions is just the main thing that we talked about on the first day. It's like stating the obvious, but it's so hot. So yeah, it's just the fitness side of things. But we worked pretty hard coming before we came out here, so it's been all right. I've not struggled too much.
Yeah, just on that, actually, and now I'm putting the cart before the horse here, but dew is actually a major factor over in the UAE, especially at night time, and conditions can kind of change. Have you noticed that at all in training? Do pitches come on a little bit more? Do the batters feel a little bit more accustomed under lights and in the evening times?
Yeah, you know your stuff, definitely. I didn't realise any of this before I got here. There actually it hasn't been dew at training, which is one thing that we thought there would have been, but we've been there still having scenarios at 9:30 and there's not been dew. But definitely the first training session was funny because I had the new ball, me and Natty with new ball. It was like basically our opening bowlers versus our opening batters. It was still light and the pitch was really quite challenging. And then as the sun goes down and the lights come on and it's dark, the pitch is just the same pitch we play on throughout the evening. It gets better and it comes on and it is a bit more skiddy and easier to play. Obviously, if you ask the batters, but I would say, yeah, I've bowled both when the sun's up and when it's been dark and on the lights. And definitely it seems a bit easier to bat on the later it gets into the evening. But we haven't had any dew yet, so it'd be interesting to see if that changes in Dubai or Sharjah.
She sounded surprised that I knew my
stuff.
I've been out there before and covered cricket, you know.
I just get impressed when someone else knows something like that because I'm pretty clueless before it.
Well, if that impresses you, this is great news. Hugely beneficial. It's obviously a camp. So talk us through, if you will, a sort of a typical day in training camp, because obviously the England women have been playing the series out in Ireland, you guys over in Abu Dhabi. So what is the typical day in a training camp?
Well, everyone's going to think that we've got quite a good life, really. Well, because it's obviously so hot and all but one of our games in the evening, our trainings have been starting at 5. So we'll leave for training at 4:30. So we've got most of the day to chill, I think. I mean, lots of people, the golfers have been playing golf. I haven't played any golf yet. So they play golf like early in the morning. My day kind of looks like I'll sleep in and then I'll go out for breakfast and get coffee. We've got, it sounds really boring, but we've got a book club. So we sit and read our books.
Who's in the book club, Belly?
All the cool ones. Obviously, it's like, it's me, Dunks, Lindsay, Freya, Glennie dips in and out. We're like the main stayers of book club.
What's the current book of choice, or what are you going through? Do you discuss it?
Yeah, do we?
Oh, really?
Colleen Hoover is like the author of choice at the moment, and we all just kind of pass around the same Colleen Hoover books. And we've all read the same series called The Housemaid. So like I'll be reading one and Lindsay will be on the next one and then we'll just pass it on. Anyway, so we do that.
Rock and roll.
Wild.
Very rock and roll. And what about back to the cricket? So I'd love to know more about the book club. Yeah. But obviously the preparation for this World Cup has started, you know, probably 12 months. Well, since the last T20 World Cup, obviously out in South Africa. So you're in Dubai, you're in Abu Dhabi now, you're going to be in Dubai soon, your first game is not too far away. Messaging from the coaches, John Lewis, what has the chat been in terms of his messaging and direction for heading into this World Cup?
Yeah, so I think like one thing that we've done that's like been since John Lewis has come in and definitely since South Africa and all through the Ashes last summer and everything is being like how well we know each other and like getting to know each other as a group. So like that's something that when we can get together in times like this, like every day there's like a question and it's very much stirs us to like, I guess it's like more share how we're feeling and it gets us better at like giving each other feedback and like discussing conditions or how we're feeling or anything like that. So that's been like a big thing. It's obviously not physical, it's more mental, but it's a big part of how we're going to get the best out of each other. And it's getting really good leading into this. And then obviously the other part of it is that now we're at this, we're calling it a prep camp. It's not a training camp, it's a prep camp. It's a way of getting us into a position that we feel is going to make us most prepped for the World Cup. And obviously like this is the time we've got to do scenarios and maybe challenge yourself. And then the closer you get towards games, the closer you want to do things that make you feel good and make you feel like you're going into a game. So it's just that balance. Is the more we move towards the games, the more I'll probably bowl less at Nat Siver and more at a stump and make myself feel good before I go into the game. So that sort of thing.
Yeah, I can imagine that would actually
sounds
work.
Like actually. Good idea.
You know, just bowl for an hour yeah. and that's it, and you just walk off. So, oh god. We'll talk about you and your bowling in just a few moments. But how do you and the team deal with expectation? Because let's be fair, there is a huge expectation. England being one of the most well-resourced countries in the cricketing world, and especially in the women's game, and there is a high expectation for you and the side to go very, very deep into this competition. How do you deal with that?
I'd say my first reply to that is that we just don't, it's not something we talk about. How far we go through this competition, whether we win it, what happens in 4 weeks' time has not once been mentioned. So I guess it's a way of, we're just, what we're focusing on isn't the expectation and how, if we're going to win it, if we're not going to win it, because that's sometimes out of your control in a cricket match. So I guess it's much more what we're focusing on is this team wants to inspire and inspire the next generation, and World Cups is one of the best places to do that, one of the biggest tournaments. So I guess focusing on that and thinking how we can do that to the most of our ability is probably more where our focus is. So I guess it takes away the what we think of what the expectation might be of us, because it hasn't been mentioned.
And just linking into that, Belly, again, before we get on to you and your bowling, crowds, I think Heather's mentioned that actually that will be something that you might have to get used to, is the lack of crowds out in Dubai. We've had an amazing summer where the 100 have been sell-out crowds, obviously international matches as well. So is that also something that's been spoken about?
It hasn't, not in conversations I've been, it hasn't been discussed, but I do think it is going to be very strange. I've kind of got used and got a buzz and an adrenaline from playing in front of all these crowds. And then obviously we might come to play against with not many, but I guess that's where, I mean, you've got the adrenaline of a World Cup and you're playing for your country in a World Cup. Like sometimes that should be enough for everybody. And then I guess you just got to make your own energy, and it will be a shame, but it's not a lot you can do about it.
Let's talk bowling now. And it's been fabulous from our perspective to see your progression from when you first came onto the scene, and, you know, with the Southern Vipers and then playing in the 100 and then internationally as well. I want to focus a little bit more on the last 12 months or so, because I remember being out in India watching you in the test match in India in Navi Mumbai, and genuinely me thinking that you'd made a significant leap into knowing your own game, knowing your bowling, hitting the pitch hard, getting that movement and causing real problems, being a much more rounded bowler. Now, this was my view of things as I was watching you out there. This last 12 months, we've seen a little bit of a change. This is the tough bit of the interview, Lauren. You're looking forward to, you can already,
I knew this was coming.
But we're going to do it in a really nice way. It's not that, but there has been changes being made, not all of which, and I think I've been quite outspoken in saying, you know, that I have not agreed with. Not that it makes any blind bit of difference what I think. It's what you think and what the coaches think. But there have been changes made. Talk us through what the changes are, what you've been trying to achieve, and the processes within that.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to understand what I've been doing as a bowler and the changes I've made through seeing me play in a cricket match in a competitive situation. So like what we're changing, so obviously leading into India, the biggest change was my fitness and my strength. And that was probably why hitting the pitch harder, a bit of pace is where that came from, because I finished the Ashes and I have never played a series that's wiped me out so much. And so I worked hard on my strength and my fitness, and that was where that came from pretty much. And then since then, I guess Mason, Louis and I sat down and thought, how, obviously being one of the best seamers in the world is like an aim and a goal of mine. And it was, how am I gonna push my game forward now? I've got my in-swing and I've got a bit more pace, but how am I going to push my game on? So we've chatted about it, and obviously my action was falling away a little bit. So we've worked on technically got me a bit more upright. And in doing that, it's allowed me access to swing the ball away and in. And so once we changed my action, we realized Mace knew that might happen, but obviously didn't tell me at the time. It was just like, right, we're going to focus on your technical change, get you in a good position, more bounce, more pace, and then we can see where we go from there. And then I guess this summer, it's been tricky because when you learn a new skill and it gets challenged, you just want to do it. And you just, every game I was like, I'd do it in training, I'd bowl my away swinger, and I'd be like, I can do this, like I want to bowl it in a game. And then it was my main focus in a game is to be able to do it. And I think what you forget is that what you actually need to do in a game is go into a game and assess conditions, assess who you're bowling at, and see what you need to do at the time. But I think I was obviously working on my game so much outside of it that all I wanted to do was take what I'd learned into a game and see if I could do it. And it was obviously all really exciting. So I think over the summer and now coming into a World Cup, I'm learning that, yes, I'm working really hard on my away swinger. Yes, my in swinger, I've not bowled it as much this summer, but it's not to say I can't bowl it anymore. And it's definitely still there. I just have bowled it all my career and got so excited about this new stuff. So it's very much, I've got more skills now, and now I need to learn about my game again of when to use what skills, who I'm bowling at. And I guess sometimes I've played a lot of short format cricket this summer, but these skills sometimes might not come out till I play in an Ashes Test match. And that's when they're really, really important. And I think Mace and Louis have looked long-term and got a Test match in South Africa, got ODIs in the Ashes, got a Test match in the Ashes. And if I have that skill, I could be a much more threatening bowler than just my in-swing. I think this summer was just a learner. And I was only learning it. I wanted to bowl it in games to see if I could do it. And I guess it was all very new, and it was like the teething stage, and I guess it just lasted a bit longer. Does that make sense?
Just briefly, yeah. before Liz comes back in. So do you now know, are you confident within yourself that you know what you're bowling, you know what's going to come out, and when you're coming into the crease, what's going to happen or what you hope is going to happen is going to happen? Are you in a much better place with it now?
Yeah, well, I have a ball that I'm 100% confident with. It's my go-to. And then swinging the ball, I'm really excited for the fact I can swing it both ways. And it's just one of those, it's a volume thing. I just need to bowl it and get, the more I bowl it, the more consistent I'll get. And then the more I switch between them, the more I'll be able to switch, and it will be like, I'll be able to go in and then straight away be able to adjust my line and be able to go away. And that's obviously, it just takes time. Like, that is just something of like, it's a high class thing to do, and it just takes time to be able to nail it every over, I guess. But yeah, I feel in a really good place that I know what my best ball is at the moment, and I know what my skills are.
Yeah, similar to batting, isn't it? I think when you are making a technical change, it can take a long time before it is properly embedded into your game, but once it's there, you can call upon it any time. Nice to listen to the bowlers chat anyway.
Well, it is. And Belly, like I say, it's not easy to swing it both ways at decent pace. Not all of us can do it. But there's one more bowling question I've got, if that's all right. Thank you. And again, this is not a negative thing, Belly. But it's how you come back from sort of bad situations. I want to take you back to the Rose Bowl, the Aegeus Bowl, or the Utilita Bowl, or whatever the hell bowl it is now. It could change within a short space of time. And go back to the back end of that one-day international against Australia, where Georgia Wareham, took to you. This is not to sort of say, but it's... Do those moments, because obviously it's never easy as a bowler getting pumped round the park. I've had it done it to me, and you feel like about this big. How do you feel that moments like that shape you a little bit as a bowler. You understand what you did, perhaps. You understand what you didn't do, or how to fix certain areas, or what to do next time. Do you think actually there's a positivity, oddly, that can come from those kind of situations?
Yeah, I think at the time it was awful, but like in hindsight, me and Mace speak about it all the time. It's one of the best things that has happened to me in my international career, because it highlighted where I was at and it highlighted what I needed to do. And I think I would like to think that if I was ever close to being in that situation again, I'm equipped far better to deal with it and to slow everything down. And I've one, realised what skills I was missing and gone away and made sure that I was not put in that situation again with those limited skills. And two, worked mentally on, if I'm ever in that situation, how am I going to try and win the back end or come back? But yeah, I think me and Mace agree that it's probably one of the best things that happened to me, even though it was really quite awful
I agree.
I think every cricketer's been there, haven't they? With the batter or bowler. But Belly, thanks so much for obviously that insight. And just before we let you go, I know you've got training. You look at your group, the other teams in it: Bangladesh, Scotland, South Africa, West Indies. Your first game is Bangladesh. I suppose that's as far as you're looking. So what will be, I guess, the key things that you want to walk away with in that match? And what sort of threat do you think Bangladesh will pose to you as a side?
Yeah, I think even we're not looking that far yet. We're still just focusing on ourselves. I think the focus throughout the whole World Cup will be on ourselves, really. But I think it's a good way. You always want to start the tournament strong, and you want to go out and play the sort of cricket that we're planning on playing throughout this competition. So yeah, I think every team in this World Cup poses a different threat and their own threat. And it will be, I guess, the closer we get to the time, the more prep we'll do, I guess, about Bangladesh. But yeah, even at the moment, everything is very much on how we're going to play and what we want to do, and it's all very exciting.
Fair enough. Sounds like a good plan of attack. Staying in the zone.
Certainly does. Yeah. Well, I've learned much.
Yes.
And the things that, apart from the bowling, is book club.
Yes.
Keep up with the gym selfies on your Insta, by the way. posted one today.
That's Pilates. That's something I forgot to add onto my daily routine. Is
do you do Pilates now?
Oh, I love Pilates. So good for you.
Oh, right. Well, better get on that.
Buy yoga mat or something.
Yeah, better have it. Absolutely.
We'll have to get on to it. But thank you so much, Belly. Good luck to you and the team for the World Cup.
Thanks.
We'll obviously be watching on. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Right. How good is that, Douglas, to hear from Lauren Bell? Obviously, she's been through that tricky period this season, hasn't she? Obviously, with her bowling action, trying to make changes, which you know more than me, it's a tough thing to do.
It is, and I've said this to her in the interview, that, you know, this is not something that I would want to do, and it's I don't think it's something that I think necessarily benefits bowlers to try things. I don't think. And look, I'm more than happy to be proved wrong. I'm more than happy to have other opinions thrown at me. But I just think if you are working on certain aspects of the game, it shouldn't be done during an international period. I think international games, even though you know you're pretty much going to beat Pakistan in your own backyard, I think it's slightly disrespectful in that respect to sort of say, you know, try things in international cricket. I'd rather see those tried on a domestic level rather than internationally. But that's just me. I think any change, and I think this comes whether you're a batter or a bowler, any change or great changes, and for a bowler, changing feet position, wrist position, trying to do something different with the ball, these are things that don't take a couple of months. They can take, you know, up to a year, maybe, and to have them absolutely nailed can take maybe a year to 18 months. And if you're trying to change something in batting, it doesn't just happen like that. And it takes time in the nets, in the indoor school, you know, videoing yourself, making sure that these changes are actually what you want and that the results are going to be what you kind of expect. And I don't, that's just a personal opinion from me, but I imagine it's not too dissimilar as a batter.
No, I feel the same. I think at times during the summer, I did feel a bit uneasy as to what we were seeing. Obviously, she was in a way exposed because she was making those changes, but as obviously chatting to her just then, she's clearly in a good place. I think obviously the fact they're in Abu Dhabi gives them a good amount of time to get used to the conditions that they're going to have out in Dubai, which, you know, they're pretty much the same environments, aren't they?
I know Lauren, you know, we've got to see her grow as a cricketer and as a bowler, especially over what would it be now, 3-4 years, something like that. Since she first burst onto the scene, I don't think she's ever not in a good place. She's such a happy, you know, happy-go-lucky, lovely demeanour out on the field, smiles a lot during the game, which I like. I like to see people enjoying themselves on a cricket field. Yes, it's serious, and yes, it's, you know, but it is a game at the end of the day, and I like the way that she approaches a cricket. I wish she wouldn't smile and laugh when she's just shelled a catch. I've got to be honest, that's just the person. If I was the bowler and Lauren shells a catch and she's laughing and joking, I don't necessarily think that would put me in the best mood. But again, that's just a personal thing.
No, but anyway, it was really good to chat to Lauren Bell. And interestingly, it's fascinating seeing how the sides, obviously leading into the World Cup, are going about the best way to prepare for them. England are out in Abu Dhabi, but other teams, which we're going to move on to now, are actually having series against each other. There's two series. Well, one has already been completed, South Africa against Pakistan. They were actually out in Pakistan. They were playing in the Moulton Stadium. They had a three-match T20 series, which was a good one, actually.
Yeah, it really was. It was
1-1 going into the last game. South Africa won the first game by 10 wickets. They managed to defend 132. Pakistan took the second match after they posted 181, which when I looked at the scorecard, because I thought, blimey, that's good going. South Africa just managed to get up to 168. And then in the decider, South Africa chased down 153 with 9 balls to spare. And I don't know about you, Daggers, but that is a proper good series, isn't it?
It's a really good series. And one of the things that stuck out for me was, of course, Pakistan winning one at home. That's fantastic for them. But it was the fact that it's a good and a bad thing. And let me explain. The majority of Pakistan's runs, especially in that 180-181 score, Muneeba Ali top scored with 45. She had a pretty good series, all in all. But a lot of the runs have been shared around. Mm-hmm. No one's actually really getting to grips and going on to make a big one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 70 and 80 kind of score, which is a little bit concerning going into. It's great that all of the Pakistan side are having time at the crease and are actually getting scores, 20s, 30s, that sort of thing, and getting them at a decent lick as well. But I would like to see a couple of players. I'd like to see Muneeba turn that 45 into a 70 or an 80, because that would get good sides worried. And I think if you always feel there's a chance, a little bit like when we saw Pakistan in this country, you know, as soon as they get a little bit of something going, there's a mistake round the corner, there's a bad decision round the corner. And I just would like to see that element of their game reduced to a certain degree, because then they could be a little bit more of a force. But fantastic series. Great to see, you know, South Africa runs. I would like to see more of Annerie Dirksen. I've not seen a great deal of her. She got runs in the final T20, 340s for South Africa. Wolfhart, we know all about. And Annika Bosch got 46. She was retired, not out. I hope she wasn't hurt. I've not seen what happened there, or whether they just retired or anyway. But that second T20, 181, really, really impressive from Pakistan. Let's see what they can do in the World T20.
Absolutely. And just before we move on to the Australia-New Zealand T20 series, your thoughts on the two captains of South Africa and Pakistan? They're relatively new, and for both of them, this is going to be their first T20 World Cup that they're going to be captaining. So they've only got 3 matches to get their head around how everything's going to work. Laura Wolvart, who has been in the job longer, which I think, you know, we can safely say that she's probably a bit more used to it. But then Fatima Sana has sort of been thrown in the deep end. So there's a few challenges with
There's nothing like a bit of a bit of a test going into a world competition of your captaincy skills.
Yeah.
And look, I think For Wolfhart, I'm not worried about because she's, you know, been around the world. She's played franchise cricket. She knows the T20 game backwards, and she knows her players as well.
Yeah.
She has been part of that South African side for quite some time. So I'm not really worried about that. how it affects her own performances. It doesn't seem to at the moment at the captaincy. In fact, it possibly emboldens her with a bit. I mean, she was responsible anyway, even more responsibility, perhaps. But from Fatima Sana's perspective, again, this is not someone who's new to international cricket. I think having a fresh start for Pakistan, who have got a few results under their belts. Yeah, they didn't have any here in England, but you go back to New Zealand, where they toured prior to coming to England. You see this performance against South Africa, albeit losing the series 2-1. A lot of positivity coming out of that. I mean, of course, the deep end it is, but how do you see it? Because I am less worried for her, given that Pakistan are starting to show a little bit of something.
Yeah.
They're not being run over by sides.
No, I agree with that. And actually, there's a few parallels with them and Sri Lanka in that they're actually finding more depth within their side.
Yeah.
At good times as well, going into the World Cup. And Fatima Sana as a character, I think, is great. Yeah. I really enjoy watching her. So I'd imagine she would take it all in her stride. But we'll find out, obviously, that the World Cup is just around the corner. Right, just to finish things off, the other international series going on, as I mentioned, is Australia against New Zealand. They're playing that in Mackay, which is in Queensland. It's a three-match T20 series, which Australia currently lead 1-0. They managed to chase down 143 with 8 balls to spare. The second game is actually going on as we speak. So Australia were batting first. When I last looked, they were around 100 odd for not many, with about 5 overs to go. So you're listening to this, you will know the result by the time we stop waffling on. So we'll see how that turns out.
Do you not think we could actually do a lot more of those types of scoreboards? Instead of actually saying they're 243 for 7, they're like 200 and odd for about half the team, something like that. And they're just, and people kind of get an understanding.
They get a gist
of what's going on. No, absolutely. I like that. 100 and odd for not many, with 5 to go.
Just setting the scene for everyone. Well, there we go.
You see, I can now at least gauge where Australia are. The 100 odd for not many, they should be looking 170, something like that. Yeah, 160, 170, let's see how we go. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, won't we? The one thing for me that has stood out is the for Australia is the injury worries that they've had.
Yes, sir.
Ash Gardner was out for the first game. It was a bit of a bizarre incident. I think there was a collision between her and Georgia Wareham before that game. So whether it was in the warm-up or in a training session before then. So she missed that game. Georgia Wareham was fine, by the way. But Ash Gardner's back for the second game. She's actually playing at the moment. But the two which will be of worry will be Grace Harris, your mate Daggers. She's gone in the calf. And then Kim Garth has gone in the knee as well. So they're both missing this series, which, you know, hopefully it's more of a precautionary thing rather than a potential out for the World Cup. But that will be something that will be playing on the minds of Shelley Nitschke, you would have thought.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous to say that players such as this, you know, when you look at the depth of Australia and the side that they're putting out right now, where there are about 100 and odd for not many with 5 to go, I look at that side that they've put out today and just go, ugh, you know, they've not played Taylor Vlamic, they're playing Darcy Brown this time. Yeah. Vlamic played the first game. And who they don't play, it is, you know, testament to the depth that they have. However, of those two players, Kim Garth's very solid whatsoever. Mm. Yeah, but I think you can replace Kim Garth, and that's not to her detriment whatsoever as a player. I just think they have the ability to replace a player such as that. I don't think you can replace a Grace Harris in the dynamism that she brings you, her ability to take games away. Yes, there are all through Australia's side that have got players that they can clear the boundary, but not in the way that Grace Harris can. Mm-hmm. If you need 40 off 20, she's your girl.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that Sutherland can't do it, Talia McGrath can't do it, Phoebe Litchfield can't. Of course they can, Ash Gardner can do it. But I just think that, you know, if I'm Australia, I've said this before, you know, if you've got Grace Harris, you might as well play her. Mm-hmm. She gives you so much. She gives you it in the field. She can bowl you some overs and she can whack it at the top of the order. Mm-hmm. And you still back down to 10.
Yeah.
So I think that is more of a concern for Australia that Grace Harris might not be fit. I think there is time, though, before the World T20 starts for a calf injury to get better. Depends on the severity of it. But from a New Zealand perspective, Liz, this run of T20 defeats continues. I think it stretches at 8.
Yeah, it's really worrying. And it's worrying for a number of reasons. I think because they have been a successful side in the past in this format of the game. Obviously, they've made the first final back in 2009 now, which is obviously a long time ago. But so often they were in the top four. They were making semi-finals. But now you look at teams like South Africa, West Indies, maybe not so much these days, but they have been there or thereabouts. You know, even someone like Sri Lanka as well, who you would think could push them. So I do worry for New Zealand. Obviously, we know Sophie Devine, it's going to be her last T20 World Cup as captain. They rely so heavily on Bates, Devine and Mealy Kerr.
Yep.
And they just haven't been able, whereas the Sri Lankans and the Pakistan sides have been able to find players to build a skeleton of the side. You don't quite see that with New Zealand, and I hate to say that because I really there's some great players in there.
I agree with you, and it's a side of individuals, not from a personality or, you know, the dynamic within the side, but actually you're looking for four individuals to fire, and if they do, you've got a really really good chance of progressing. But if they don't, and I'm afraid I don't think, and that just comes with depth. Bit of a worry from New Zealand that Sophie Devine missed the first T20 international with a foot injury, and that was what she was struggling with during 100 as well. So again, keep an eye out for the Devine progress on that injury. I'm not sure if she's playing right now, where Australia are probably more than 100 and odd for not many, and with probably less than 5 overs to go, or fewer maybe than 5 overs to go. Yeah, something like that.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed that New Zealand can finish on a high. That they've obviously got, 1.5 games to do that.
Yeah.
So, and then I think both sides are flying from Mackay straight out to Dubai, because I think every side's got a couple of warm-up games before the actual competition starts. I think that might be our staggers.
I think that
unless
might
you've got
be.
Anything else. I know we've got a few housekeeping things.
Carry on.
Which I was going to go for. Well, next time we chat to you, we're hoping to have Nat Germanos on, who will be joining us to preview the Group B. Obviously, Nat is South African broadcaster. She is brilliant. She knows her stuff. So it'll be a real pleasure to have her on. And the other thing we're going to do, Doug, is you mentioned it, so you talk about it, the mailbag. Which we're going to try and do during the World Cup, aren't we?
Absolutely.
And leading into it.
Well, so we've had loads of comments on our YouTube channel, which is great. Thank you so much for subscribing. If you're listening to us, you can watch us as well. And who wouldn't want to do that? But yeah, get in touch with us. We're going to do a big mailbag either during the World T20 or before it. We're not quite sure as yet. But if there's anything you would like to ask, it doesn't have to be about England. It can be our opinions or questions, whatever you have. If you disagree with us, that's okay. We'd love to get your input. And so we're going to do a mailbag edition. Ask us anything. A-U-A. Is that how you... Yeah. A-U-A. Ask us anything. So get in touch with us via social media, at Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway. You can do it via Instagram, at Charles Dagnall. There's an on-running theme. Lydia's not on Insta. She's not down with the kids like I am. And you can leave a comment or question on our YouTube channel. Just hit the subscribe button, and then you can put the comments below any of the videos that we put up there. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to have content galore, hopefully, in the build-up to the World T20 and also during it as well, where Liz is going to be out there sunning herself.
Absolutely. With plenty of sunscreen, by the way. But anyway, as ever, thank you very much for your company. We always enjoy it. Hopefully some of you are listening out there, and we will be back very shortly.